We welcome the listeners of Radio Al Ansar, 90.4 FM Durban and 105.6 FM Pietermaritzburg. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We welcome you to a series of lectures by Sheikh Ahmed Didat. Before we continue, a little insight on the life and times of late Sheikh Ahmed Didat. Sheikh Ahmed Didat's most popular book, The Choice, aptly represents the way he lived his life. He chose to study biblical text and mastered the various narratives and interpretations. His quest led him to discover the idiosyncrasies and inaccuracies that had crept into the New Testament through human intervention. He realized that the New Testament, no matter what version, could not be considered a direct revelation from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to his noble prophet Jesus, peace be upon him. While this journey of discovery greatly distressed Sheikh Didat, he decided to use the knowledge to effectively rebut attacks by Christian missionaries on Islam and the Islamic way of life. Realizing that many Muslims were on the defensive because they had little or no knowledge of what the New Testament contained, Sheikh Didat adopted the motto that the best form of defense is Iqra, to read, understand, and spread the message. He has published over 20 books and distributed millions of copies free of charge. He has delivered thousands of lectures all over the world and successfully engaged Christian evangelists in public debates. The public debates are recorded on audiovisual material and are an excellent tool to acquire the Didat method of engaging Christian evangelists. Large numbers of people have come into the fold of Islam as a result of these efforts. He was awarded the King Faisal International Award in 1986, a fitting tribute to his enormous contributions to the world of Islam. The trustees, staff, and management of Islamic Propagation Center International are committed to the legacy of Sheikh Ahmed Didat. Sheikh Ahmed Didat's contribution has been outstanding and remarkable, and his audiovisual products would benefit the community for many years to come. We call upon the international community to pray to the Almighty Allah for late Sheikh Ahmed Didat. He was indeed a soldier, scholar, debater, and an emissary of Islam, taking Allah's message to every corner of the world. We salute late Sheikh Ahmed Didat. Alhamdulillah, you have now listened to the overview of late Sheikh Ahmed Didat. May Allah be pleased with him and grant him the highest abode in Jannah. Ameen. Now, to further enlighten you, we will be playing the recordings on various subject matters of Sheikh Ahmed Didat. Subject matters like, was Christ crucified? Is Jesus God? Is the Bible God's word? What the Bible says about Muhammad? Muhammad the greatest. Muhammad, the natural successor to Christ, crucifixion, and many more. I am presenter, future psychologist, Masiha Ali. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Muslim Student Association extends a warm and cordial welcome to our guest speaker, Mr. Ahmed Didat, the staff and students of Natal Computer College. Mr. Didat will be discussing the topic, the Quran and the computer. After his talk, students will be given the opportunity to ask Mr. Didat any questions. Please feel free to ask him any questions whatsoever. Mr. Didat.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It means peace and blessings of God to each and every one of you. I feel privileged to come to speak to your computer college, and the subject that I have chosen is the Quran and the computer. Naturally, you are inquisitive, wanting to know that this book of Islam, the Holy Quran, which was revealed 1,400 years ago, did it have anything to say about the computer? Mr. Didat, you ask, how do you fit in the Quran with the computer? I said, you see, for a long time, I myself didn't see it. I have been reading the Quran in a translation form like this one, the Arabic text with the translation. And I have been reading verses, and they gave me some faint idea, but I didn't have a very clear picture until about 1975. How did it come about that I can see this relationship between the Quran and the computer? In 1975, I get a phone call from Zambia telling me that air tickets are waiting for me at the South African Airways. I must go and pick them up to visit Zambia on a lecture tour. So I rushed down to the center in Aliwal Street and Smith Street corner, South African Airways. And I go to the man at the reception and I tell him that I have had a phone call from Lusaka, Zambia, telling me that an air ticket is waiting for me. I have come to pick it up. And I know what I was expecting. I was expecting a booklet, coupons. You know what air tickets look like? Those coupons. So I was expecting such a thing like that. So I ask him that, look, I have come for it. So he tells me, said, see one of these ladies, about a dozen of them were seated in a semicircular form with those terminals, visual terminals. See one of these ladies there. How can you see one of those ladies? To me, only one person out of the lot might have had my tickets. I know what tickets look like. So I'm asking him, which one? So the way the guy flays his hands, you know, and he tells me, abruptly, like any one of them. I said, look, I'm speaking so nicely to the man. Why should he be so impolite? Is it because he's a white man and I'm an Indian? But I had no alternative. The way he directed me, I had to go. The first lady I saw was doing nothing. She was sitting at the terminal. I go up to her. I said, excuse me, madam. I have had a phone call from Lusaka, and they tell me that there is an air ticket waiting for me. I have come to pick it up. She asks me, what's your name? So I tell her, my name is Ahmed Didat. She says, spell it. So I started spelling it. A-H-M-E-D, Ahmed, D-E-E-D-A-T, Didat. While I am spelling, she is typing on the keyboard before her. She said, yes. In other words, that means she's got it. Yes, so what now? So I said, you see, I want to go from Durban to Johannesburg in the evening, on a Tuesday evening. What have you got for me? What arrangements? She said, well, there is one at 6 p.m. I said, right, that suits me fine. Can you book me on? She said, yes, yes. It's done. So I tell her, you see, on Wednesday now, the next day, I want to reach Lusaka at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what my hosts in Zambia told me. I must arrive there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I want to be there at 3 o'clock. Now, what arrangements can you make for that? So she typed again on the keyboard, and she's asking me, do you want to go through Maputo or through Gaborone's? I said, look, it doesn't matter, as long as I'm in Lusaka at 3 p.m. So she types again, and she said, you see, you are booked on Zambian Airlines, and no other, the other plane, to transfer this ticket to another, this thing, we have to contact Zambian Airlines. And there's a national holiday in Zambia today, so we can't contact Zambian Airlines. So please come tomorrow. And you can imagine my disappointment, walking from near the Mosque Madrasa Arcade to Smith Street, and expecting the ticket in my hands, that it was almost within my reach, but not within my grasp. Disappointed. Come tomorrow. So I'm asking the lady, I says, madam, where did you get all this information from? So she tells me this is from the head computer in Johannesburg. I said, you know, when you were trying to book me in at the 6 o'clock flight, suppose there was only one seat left and there were more than one of these terminals might have been trying to get the ticket. What happens then? He said, no, the first one within the second, he gets ahead, he said, he gets a ticket and the rest is blank. How does this happen? He said, you see, every computer in the country, which is connected to the head computer, has access to that knowledge. The head computer in Johannesburg. Everyone with this terminal has access to that. I said, I see. And I came out, walking back to my offices in Madrasa Arcade. While I'm walking back, the thought occurs to me that this is how this Quran was revealed. And verse from the Quran, from the 85th chapter, the last verses 21 and 23, the last verses, tells me, سَبَلْ هُوَ قُرْآنٌ مَجِيدٌ فِي لَوْحٍ مَحْفُوظٍ, that nay, this is inscribed in the glorious Quran from a tablet preserved. Now, if you have a volume like this, and if you want to know what the Quran says about the Quran, you open, just like in a dictionary, in the index, Q, and it'll tell you everything the Quran says about the Quran. I give examples. The divisions of the Quran, how it's divided into chapters and verses. Inspired message, cannot be produced by other than divine agency. Verses, fundamental and allegorical, these are all different topics. God is witness to the Quran. God's revelation, the Quran. Follow it and do right. The Quran, respect and attention due to it, Book of Wisdom, the Quran, it's in Arabic, the Quran, described, and on and on and on. What does the Quran say about the Quran? The last subject in this index on the Quran, it says the tablet preserved, chapter 85, verses 21, 22. I read it to you. So the picture comes to me, this is how it happened. See, the whole picture comes along, the history of Muhammad, that he was in Medina, I have been reading, and a Christian deputation had come from Najran, an outskirt of Yemen. They had heard that another Arab now, he's claiming to be in communion with God, he's claiming to be a prophet. So these Christians, they said, let's go and see this another Arab, and we will question him, cross-examine him, wanting to know what does he know about religion. So they come to Medina, and they are housed in the mosque of the prophet. They sleep in the mosque, they eat in the mosque, and they have a dialogue in the mosque for 3 days and three nights. It's going on. During the course of that discussion, the spokesman for the Christian is posing the question, among so many other things. He said, all right, now tell us, O Muhammad, what is your concept of God? And Muhammad, according to tradition, he doesn't just start answering. He, so to say, presses his spiritual buttons. There were no buttons to press. But I said, so to say, he presses his spiritual buttons, trying to commune with God. He said, oh my Lord, what shall I say? He could have made a case. Like we do. At times when we are asked questions, we have no ready answers, so what do? We beat around the bush. We fumble to gather our thoughts. You see, it's like this, and it's like that, and so on. While we are talking, while we are trying to share, you know, our thoughts are coming into focus. That's what we do. If I were to ask you, my children, what is 6 times 6? Immediate answer. I take it. 36. 36. I said, what is 12 times 12? You say 144, because you have a ready answer. But if you didn't have a ready answer, what do you do? You say, well, you see, you know, 6 times 6, you take 6, and you put 6 times 6, 6, 6, and we add, and 6 is 12, and 3, 6 is 18, and you are fumbling for the answer, but you will get it, but you fumble for it, what we normally do. Muhammad doesn't do that. He could have said, you see, our concept of God is almost identical to yours. You see, you believe in the God of Abraham, and the God of Moses, and the God of, he said, well, we also believe. This is how we all talk. That's how we talk. Not so Muhammad. He's asked a question and he must get it from the highest authority, from the head computer. So what he does, he presses spiritual buttons and comes the answer through his mouth. He is the end terminal. Every prophet of God is an end terminal of that head computer, the knowledge of God. If you are that, you have access to that computer. Their computer, and you have a problem, and you commune, say, oh my Lord, what shall I say? He said, tell them, Moses was told, tell them, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. You see? So he's telling them, from the head computer, whatever knowledge is given, the prophet of God, the man of God, he articulates them. So he wants to know, what shall I say? Comes the answer. You'll see it in the 112th chapter of the Quran. Amazing. You open the chapter, it begins, قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ. Say, He is God the one and only. Allahu Samad, God the eternal absolute. لَمْ يَلِدْ وَلَمْ يُولَدْ. He does not beget and is not begotten. وَلَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ كُفُوًا أَحَدْ. And there's nothing like unto Him. Finish. Whole chapter is finished. 4 verses. And back to normal. He said, you see, this is our concept of God. When he spoke, while he was speaking, the normal discussion was on a different level of speech. Now, when he's uttering those words, he's on a different level. قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ اللَّهُ السَّمَدْ لَمْ يَلِدْ وَلَمْ يُولَدْ وَلَمْ يَكُنْ لَهُ كُفُوًا أَحَدْ. And back to normal. Where did he get it from? He's asking, oh my Lord. Nobody heard him. Nobody heard him say that. But he's asking, what shall I say? Comes the answer. I want you to see it. In this book, it starts, say, he is God the one and only. Say, why? Say. A chapter begins, say, he is God the one and only. Why say? Because asked, what shall I say? Comes the answer, say, he is God the one and only. Now, this is how every verse of the Quran was revealed to the Holy Prophet Muhammad according to his needs from the head computer. He is the end terminal. As I said and I repeat, every prophet of God, every true messenger of God is that end terminal. We are not. We haven't got that facility to make a direct contact with the head computer. Now, this preserved tablet, what is a tablet? To me, that screen is a tablet, a visual screen. Your blackboard is a tablet. Your whiteboard or your green board, you know, on which you write is a tablet. Your computer chip is a tablet. The tablet of stone on which Moses wrote the Ten Commandments is a tablet. Now, this tablet that God is talking about is not made of metal or stone or the silicone chip. It is a spiritual tablet, a spiritual knowledge. It is not material. Now, what do you want to know? What else do you want to know? This is some aspect of what the Quran says about the Quran. What do you want to know about the Muslims and about Islam? Everything is in this book.
Actions speak louder than words. Pledge monthly towards Al Quran. In it, there is no doubt. Al Quran, no person should live without. The IPCI prints 5,000 copies continuously to the value of 650,000 rands. Your monthly contribution will maximize our distribution. Call now 031-306-0026 or WhatsApp 064-937-7590. It's the right thing to do. IPCI, circling the globe with the message of Islam.
The easiest way to have access to this knowledge about the Muslim is the book. We ourselves might be confused. The Muslim can be confused on so many things. But if you want to know authoritatively, what does your book of authority, the Quran, say? So you go to the Quran. So if you open the index, some of the subjects, I'll just give you a quick glance at some of the subjects. This book, claiming to be from God, naturally, it must tell us everything about God that we can know. So, and the G, look for God. There are more than 140 different references that you have access to from here, from this book, from this index. God, He is your protector. Chapter 2, verses 257 and onwards. He is the creator of all. He is most bountiful. He is merciful. He is most kind. He is beneficent. He is the orphan's shelter. He is the wanderer's guide. The guy's wandering around. He's a guide to him. He satisfies your needs. God present everywhere. He's unity. He's one, not one in a trinity. He's not one of two. He's got no begotten sons. He's wise. He's best disposer of affairs. He's most high great. He's irresistible. He's never unjust. He's exalted in power. He's free of all wants. He's worthy of all praise. And on and on and on. You want to know what does it say about man? Under M, look for man. Man means mankind, men and women. Man. Let's see what it says about man. He is tested by God. He is being tested by God. In your behavior, what are you doing? How your mind is working? What you do? Things men covet. Things that men love most. And here, I might ask you. Here, man as a male. I want you to tell me, if you can. What does he covet most? What does he love most? What does he want most? Huh? Money. Now, don't be afraid. There's no harm done. We won't disqualify you in your exams. Yes, my child. Materialist. Power. Woman. Huh? Who said that? Woman. Yes, woman. Look, this is 1400 years ago. This man, Muhammad, is made to say, things men covet. I want you to look it up. When you have this book, you will have this book. Each and every one of you will be entitled to this book free. I'll be giving it to you all free. This encyclopedia. So no use me tantalizing before you. You know that golden carrot? And says, you see, it's there. And this is, where do you get it? I say, you see, you go to the Islamic Propagation Center and you buy one. Now I want to do business with you. No, I'm not here to do business. So the Quran says, ذُيِّنَ لِلنَّاسِ حُبُّ الشَّهَوَاتِ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ. Say, fair in the sight of men is the love of things they covet. Number one, minan nisa, of women, wal baneen, then your offsprings, your children, wal kanatir mukantarati min al-zahbi wal fidda, and hoarded heaps of gold and silver, and wealthy land, and horses branded for excellence. These are the good things of this world's life, says the Quran. But the nearness to God is the best of goals to strive for. Number one, the greatest distraction for man is woman. And I'm telling the Westerner, you see, look, as the Westerner, he knows this better than us. The Westerner, he knows this. See, he exploits this weakness of man to the limit. So, can you see now, if you just know, it puts you on a better wicket. And I want to put each and every one of you on a better wicket to put the guy right. And you will get pleasure in it. Because you are not creating offense. You said, look, this is your teaching, Mr. Didat. This is your teaching. So this is what I'm offering to you. This book is, it's a book of ornament, ornamental for you from the knowledge point of view, the psychology of man, you know, about religion in general. You want to know about karma. Have you heard the word karma?
Yes.
Yes, there's a Hindu term. karma, the law of cause and effect, that every action has a reaction. Everything you do, it has its repercussions. Karma, you want to know about karma? Open K in this book and you say about karma. You know about lingam? I don't know whether you know. And the L, you'll find lingam there in this book. Believe me, in this Quran, what do you want to know? So you owe it to yourself that you take this little trouble of carrying this card and going along and redeeming it for this book, absolutely free of charge. Now, my dear children, Mr. Chairman and the lady here, I leave myself open to questions, any questions. You can ask any questions. Even criticism will be welcome. I assure you, my children, this old man can take it.
Thank you, Mr. Didat, for that rather enjoyable, enlightening talk.
That's my child. Are the Muslims and the Jews, are they not enemies?
Why
are they enemies? No, we as Muslims and Jews, or Muslims and Christians, or Muslims and Hindus, we are not enemies to one another. But we are at war. The Jews and the Muslims are at war. What are they fighting about? They are fighting for a piece of land called Palestine. My brothers, the Arabs, they say Palestine belongs to them. My cousins, the Jews, they say Palestine belongs to them. It's a battle for the land. We are brothers and cousins now. And both are claiming the same piece of land. What are the rights and wrongs of it? You say, now that is something that we can discuss. We can talk. For example, I'm talking to the Jews. I said, come and talk to me. I'm talking to the Jews. I've spoken to them at the University of Cape Town. I've spoken to them here at the Natal University. I have had so many discussions with them. I have written a book, Arabs and Israel, Conflict or Conciliation, and I send it to every influential Jew in the country, in South Africa. The reaction was, they want to kill me, they want to bomb me. I said, come, talk to him. I got it all recorded, you know, when they phone up and they use abusive language and what they're going to do to me and all that. I said, come and talk, because my book says, call people to a dialogue. Come, let us talk. See if we can see reason. So it is not Muslim want to kill Jews or Jews wanting to kill Muslims. Because we have lived together, Muslim and the Jews, for over 1,000 years, no problem. You see, in Spain, the Muslims ruled Spain for 800 years. And the Jews were the second highest in the hierarchy doing work among the Muslims. The greatest achievement of the Jews was by the Jews in Spain and the Muslim rule. And for 1,000 years, when the Christians were persecuting the Jews, and when they ran for shelter, protection, refuge, they went to Muslim lands. And every Muslim country accepted them with open arms. Say, ahlan wa sahlan. It's a family and plane. You know, come and live among us. We are the children of the same father, Abraham. Abraham had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. You are the children of Isaac. We are the children of Ishmael. As such, we are brothers. Come, live together. And they live for 1,000 years, not a single riot against the Jews, not a single, nothing. The only time the problem started was with Palestine. When the Jews, they went to seek shelter there, and they went, and they went, and they filled up, and then they said, now we will take over. For the first time, the Muslim wakes up to the reality. He says, now everything, this guy is going to take it over. Inch by inch, the guy's got in. Now, he's got the backing of the Western nations, and he's technologically he's more advanced than the poor Palestinians. And he says, now these are easy meat for them. So now they wake up, he says, no, man, this is not right. So this conflict from 1918 onwards, prior to that, no problems between the Muslims and the Jews. Yes, anybody else? Why do they wear a topi or whatever you want to call it? This is from the religious point of view. In our relationship with God, it's not a necessity. This is not a necessity. But in society, we need an identity. Suppose I meet you in the street, I might think that maybe he's a Tamilian, and if I knew how to say good morning to you in Tamil, I would have said it. Otherwise, now I'm at a loss that the other guy, like me, who looks like me, the Banya, they are my cousins. See, we are the same race. Banyas and me, I'm a Gujarati Muslim. The Banyas are Gujarati Hindus. In our complexions, we are the same. The Banya Hindu and the Banya Muslim is the same. We also have the same surnames, if you know. Muslim Patel, Banya Patel. Muslim Desai, Banya Desai. Muslim Bhula, Banya Bhula. I'm sure you have come across. Right. So what is all this? No, actually we are one people. Now when I see the man in Grey Street, I'm telling you, frankly, I pass the people in Grey Street and a lot of people, they smile at me. Now I don't know whether the guy is a Banya Hindu or a Banya Muslim. I don't know. So I also smile. Because I can't make out. Well, because I keep on seeing them, their face becomes familiar, as if I know the guy. But now what shall I say? Shall I say Namaste? Shall I say Ram Ram? Shall I say Assalamu Alaikum? I said, what shall I say? So because I don't know, I'm not sure, I also give a big smile. Now in the West, my people now, because of this problem, they start saying hi, hi, you know, you're 100% okay. You know, hi, you can't say salam babu, salam bhaiya, or you can't say what you say hi becomes universal. So we wouldn't like to lose our culture and tradition. I like to wish you, my son, whether you are an African Muslim, I say salam alaikum. If I see you are an Indian, I say salam alaikum. Anybody, I go to China, I see somebody, I say salam alaikum. And that's an open door for us. See, as soon as I say salam alaikum, I go to a strange place, Hong Kong. I've been there, Hong Kong, Singapore. And you see anybody, say salam alaikum. I says, you know, I come from South Africa. I want to know, where is the mosque? I say, come. I will take you. Otherwise, I'm asking, excuse me, where's the mosque? So what's that? If I recognize somebody, immediately say salam alaikum, and his heart and home are open for me. It's like an open sesame, you know, this headgear. So I said, now, for the purpose of recognition that I may wish people, I want my children and my people to have an identity that, you know, we can wish you salam alaikum, you say wa alaikum salam, and immediately it's a bond is created, immediately. I give an example in the tubes in London. I've been sitting so many times, a man across from me, you know, sitting face to face in the train, in the tube, and you dare not open your mouth. You don't know how to start. He says, excuse me, where you come from? Look, among us, it's so easy. By God, it's so easy. If I say, salam alaikum, what is that? So where you come from? So he tells me, I come from certain states. He says, I come from South Africa. So where? You're from South Africa. He says, Durban. I said, what do you mean Durban? I come from Durban and I haven't seen you. He said, no. I live here in Springfield, like that. I said, immediate bond. Where you come from? I said, Pakistan. I said, you know, I was also in Pakistan for 3 years. You know, I was in, bond, immediate bond. But now, the other guy, because they're not used to that, as soon as I ask, they say, where you come from? He said, why, that's your business. Is that your business? The other guy, I can ask him immediately our culture. He said, are you married? This young fellow here. He says, no. I said, why, what's wrong with you? Huh? Come on, I'll show you, there's Mr. Dida's daughter comes here. No, this is our culture. Are you married? Yes. And the children? Look, this is to us like we are all open book to everybody. We want to know. We want you to know everything about me, and I want to know everything about you. And this does it when I know that this is our cultural background. I can talk to you more freely. Otherwise, I'm afraid. As soon as I ask you some question, you say, what are you from the inspectorate, receiver of revenue? What is it? Why don't females to the mosques? You see, the mosque, the obligation to pray in the house of Islam is on everybody, male and female. We are all obligated. Fasting, same. Pilgrimage, everything that the man does, the woman does. Everything, same. But there is what is called a segregation of the sexes in the house of Islam. Like among the Africans, you say shonipa, respect for womanhood. See, the man comes along into the kraal, the men go with the men, and the women go with the women. Now, in our culture, it's the same. There is what is called a segregation of the sexes. Men and women are not allowed to freely intermingle. So in the absence of a separate facility in the mosque, where they can come into the mosque without intermingling with men, they pray at home. But now in the mosques in South Africa, provisions are being made. You know, where you have a separate entrance for the ladies, separate ablution facility for washing, toilets, everything separate. They are in the mosque, yet out of the mosque. In other words, what is forbidden is free intermingling. The young man wants to know about circumcision. I know that is the biggest barrier. The man says, man, I agree with you, everything is fine, I said, look, man, you mustn't eat the pig. He said, but what's wrong, man? Pork. I said, well, I'll reason with you. He said, well, I can see your point. I said, look, you mustn't drink. He said, but uncle, a little nip or a tot, man. I said, look, my son, these are the dangers. He said, well, I can see your point. I said, no, don't be promiscuous. Don't go along and dance with other people's wives and daughters. And I said, but what's wrong, uncle? I said, look, I will reason with you. And he says, uncle, I see your point of view. But now you agree with everything. And I said, now, circumcision. That's hard. So now I said, now what is this? I said, my son, this is for your own benefit. Look, now I'm talking objectively. Yesterday, day before yesterday, it was in our local paper. Cancer, the cervix in women, which is a killer among women. Cancer of the womb is a killer of women. 85% of all women who suffer from cancer of the womb are wives of uncircumcised husbands. Problem. I went to the R.K. Khan Hospital some years ago. I had a problem and I'm sleeping there on the bed. So this is our culture. See, say you, what you here for? What you here for means what's your problem? What's your name, Mr. Reddy? So he tells me, so uncle, what? He says, problem with the foreskin, circumcision. Next to me is a young boy, schoolboy. I said, what's wrong with you? He said, no, nothing wrong with me. I said, no. No, I want to know what brings you here. What are you here? So he says, you see, uncle, telling me, actually, he's got constriction. He must be circumcised. Across the aisle, Hindustani gentleman, about 50 years and more. So I go up to him. I said, bhaiya, what brings you here? Why are you here? So again, he's in turmoil. He's in torture. He's trying to tell me he's got a problem. he must be circumcised, otherwise the skin has come in the way. I said, you know, I'm telling the nurses, look, you see, I'm as you see me, I enjoy talking. So I say, you know, you, your husband, is he circumcised? He said, no. Your husband, is he circumcised? He says, no. I say, hey, you got a problem. I said, tell them all to be circumcised. Not for religious reasons. I said, as much as we are vaccinated, for what? Our government tells us, according to the health regulations, that if you're vaccinated, there's less likelihood of you getting smallpox and this and that. Diphtheria, anti-diphtheria, this thing, and all that, they're doing it to you for what? To save you. They give us vaccination, inoculation against smallpox, typhoid and all that before you go overseas. What for? They hate you? No. But for your benefit. So now this circumcision, I said, if I came into power in this country, I will pass a law, circumcise every male child in the country, Indian, African, colored, white. Nothing to do with religion. I said, for health reasons. I said, 85% of my children, my daughters, who are married to uncircumcised husbands, they are suffering from cancer of the womb, a killer disease among women. I said, just to save that, there are so many other philosophical aspects. You come and see me, and I will give you further details, which I can't share with you here. But I said, now, just that alone, 85% of the women who suffer from cancer of the womb are wives of uncircumcised husband. I say, circumcise everybody. That operation, you know how easy it is. You see, previously under primitive condition, the septic, this thing, it lasted for a long time and you suffered. Man, I had a young man circumcised on a Sunday morning, and Monday morning on a bicycle he went to work. It is as difficult as that, you know. Sunday he gets operated on, and Monday morning he's riding a bicycle, he's making deliveries. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Upon listening to the various subject matters and episodes, please assist the IPCI to continue the legacy of Sheikh Didat. For all your contributions within Durban area, call or WhatsApp Abdul Khalik Ali on 078-768-7948 and Johannesburg Muhammad Khan on 083-982-8828.